Harvard University has announced that all course instruction will be delivered online this fall, even for students invited back to the campus. The Ivy League has announced that cancellation of all athletics for the fall. The University of California will offer most of its classes online. The University of Maryland will introduce a hybrid system with some courses online and others in person. But clearly, with the spike in the pandemic, the entire university system is in flux. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. My guest today is Adam Wood. Adam is the outgoing president of the Faculty Senate at Salisbury University. He is the former chair of the Department of English and has served on the Committee on Academic Freedom and Tenure. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
Adam, what are the current plans for the fall at Salisbury University?
The current plans, and again, this could, you know, end up changing tomorrow with everything that's going on, but the current plans are a sort of a soft reopening, we might say. They are encouraging some students to come back to campus. They're obviously having to take, you know, great cares for things like that. And the idea is to have, as you mentioned, in terms of the USM system, sort of a hybrid model where some courses will be meeting face-to-face, some courses will be some sort of a hybrid with partial meetings, some online, and some will be fully online. And right now, from what I understand, it's about a third for, again, even the idea of face-to-face classes, though, is sort of complicated because if you have a class of, say, 25 students, normally you would meet in a room that holds 25 students. Those rooms have now been re-rated in terms of social distancing requirements, and you really get about a third, maybe, at the most. There are some classrooms that I have seen that have normally been rated for about 24, 25 students, and they will hold safely about 6 students now. So this is obviously very complicated. You know, most institutions are very similar to Salisbury, where we don't have a ton of big, giant rooms, right? If we had a ton of big rooms, you could just space 25 kids out in a really large room, but we just don't have enough of those rooms. And so again, faculty are really sort of figuring out exactly how they're gonna do this. You know, some faculty are doing face-to-face, may meet with 6 students one day, 6 students the next class meeting, and then the other 6 the class meeting after that. A lot of it is really up in the air right now as we really try to figure this out. You know, safety is certainly a concern. And so there are, before anybody goes onto campus, you have to do one of these little health check-ins where they take your temperature and ask you about symptoms. And so they're doing everything they can to really try to make the campus safe. But the reality is there's no such thing as a perfectly safe campus. All it takes is one student, to have COVID-19 and to be too close to somebody, to take their mask off, they sneeze, whatever it is, and it could quickly spread. But as of right now, the plan is to do this sort of softer reopening. A lot of that is, and we can get into this in a bit, a lot of that is, of course, driven by financial concerns. You know, you mentioned the Ivy Leagues, you know, some of them have gone to fully online. And while I think they often like to pitch it as that their greatest concern is for safety, they also have the money that they can do that securely. You know, some of these Ivy Leagues have millions and millions of dollars in sort of their war chest. And so they can really afford to take a semester, if not a full year, online if they need to, where there are other institutions, much smaller, a lot of small liberal arts colleges, are going to end up folding because of this, that if they don't have students in the dorms, you know, paying for meal plans in the fall, they will not survive the year. SU, I think, is somewhere in the middle of that. You know, we have a decent endowment that we can fall back upon, but at the same time, if something happened and we were forced to be fully online in the fall, it would be a really, really difficult financial situation for us.
I wondered if the university has contingency plans relative to this kind of hybrid approach that you mentioned, because the Salisbury area, and I know your students come from all over the place, not just Salisbury and Wicomico County and even the Eastern Shore, but it has a global reach. But I wondered, our area, that area has been spared to a great extent from the virus. I think my conversation with Dr. Michael Murphy indicates that there are only about 10 cases in the hospital in Salisbury at this point. However, in terms of your hybrid system, if there is a spike in the growth of the pandemic in the Eastern Shore area, and I wondered if the university, what kind at least of contingency plans the university has.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like I said, it's about a third fully online, a third hybrid, a third face-to-face are the rough numbers that I've heard right now. At the same time, though, you know, faculty are really being encouraged to prepare their classes for fully online as well. Because you're right. I mean, you know, we think about, you know, being so close to the beach and any number of these sorts of things that we could very quickly see a spike here that would change the approach. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in Ocean City about, you know, potential threats there with COVID. And he said that he was less worried about the people from Maryland than all the knuckleheads from other states who came to the beach and one of them has it. And so, again, you know, I think the university is very much aware that every plan that we're making and everything that we're trying to do could change in an instant. And so, again, you know, faculty have been encouraged to, you know, even those of us, you know, I'm one of the faculty who said I'd really love to be back in the classroom if it's all possible. I still have to prepare my fall course to go online at any time. And again, that could happen in 2 weeks. That could happen a week before classes start. You know, there's always the possibility that classes start and 2 weeks in, there's a spike, student diagnosed, any number of things. You know, there's also the very strong realization, and none of this is guaranteed, but as we move into the cooler months, we may see another spike. And so even a lot of universities that are opening in the fall are very much making contingency plans that realistically after Thanksgiving, there's a good chance that everything may be online for the rest of the semester then. Again, nobody knows. It's just, it's impossible to see. You know, you do see some states, California, Florida, Texas, where there are massive sort of spikes going on. Where, you know, realistically, it's probably going to be too late to really pull back in those sort of states. Maryland has done exceedingly well so far, but again, all this could change tomorrow. And that's one of the really, I think, frustrating things about working with this is that people are looking for definitive answers. And the reality is there's only the answer that can be given right now or this week. And that, again, those answers could change drastically in the course of days or a couple of weeks.
Adam, in the system that you're looking forward to, the students of course who come in for in-person in instruction are one thing. However, what is the university thinking about the faculty, the support staff, and others who must interact in one way or another with these in-person students? What is the thinking about protection for yourself and people who will work on the campus and interact with these in-person students?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the big tensions right now, I think, in higher ed, particularly for institutions that are planning on opening, is, you know, some schools have taken a much more sort of liberal approach and let faculty choose if they are comfortable coming to campus for face-to-face courses or if they would choose to stay at home. As of right now, at least, SU is sort of taking that approach, that they're sort of allowing faculty that freedom of choice. other universities I have heard of are being much more stringent about it, you know, forcing people to prove that they have a pre-existing condition or they have a child or someone they take care of that has a pre-existing condition. And so there's a lot of, you're starting to see a lot of pushback at some schools. You know, a phrase that has been used, there was an article on the Chronicle of Higher Education that referred to faculty sort of being used as cannon fodder, right? That it's great for administrators to say, oh, everything's going to be fine, we're going to open up. But you're right that it is faculty and some staff that are much more on the front lines. And so there is a lot of tension about that, right? You know, everyone will be required to wear face masks. You know, again, that certainly complicates face-to-face teaching, you know, muffled voices, or you can imagine some courses where seeing someone's mouth is really required. I think about teaching of foreign languages, where watching someone move their mouth is essential to learning the sound of a new language. But so in terms of safety measures being taken right now, again, I've mentioned the social distancing in classrooms, right? They've looked at basically every possible meeting space on campus, tried to figure out how many people can safely be in a room. Again, you know, they've got testing. They're going to be handing out masks. Students will be required to wear masks. If they show up without a mask in class, faculty can boot them out for not wearing them. And so again, you know, there is very much an attempt to de-densify, to put sort of safety measures in place. And again, all those things are necessary and important. Again, though, the complication is that we've got young people doing young people things. You know, we've seen, unfortunately, some of the beaches where young people are turning out in droves. You hear these, you know, horror stories about young people having COVID parties. I just heard of this last week, where you invite someone who has it, and then everybody puts in a couple of bucks into a pot to see who's going to get it next. And again, I think a lot of times young people don't realize the danger of this. And so again, you know, it is really is one of these things that even if everything looks great and we open up in the fall, things could change phenomenally quickly, no matter what we do. You know, for dorms, they're going for a lot more single room dorms, but there are some dorms that have two students in it. I think they're being a bit more flexible with allowing students to choose who they're rooming with, perhaps if they know someone who may be already in their circle. But again, there is no way to make this 100% safe on college campuses. And that's unfortunately just the reality that we move into. And it's understandable why some faculty are very uncomfortable with the idea of coming back in.
This is kind of a mundane question, Adam, but then it seems all of our questions right now in the middle of this pandemic are rather mundane things that we wouldn't even think about in another time. But what about food services on the campus for those students who I'm assuming are going to live in dorms and yeah. and so forth on the campus? What about food services?
From what I understand right now, the plan is to open them back up, but to really not use the cafeterias in the traditional sense. I mean, that's just an accident waiting to happen, cramming that many people in. And so from what I understand, a lot more of the dining services, at least at SU in this coming year, will be sort of a takeout model. You know, students will show up, they'll go through the lines, all socially distanced, but once they get that, they need to beat it. They will take the food, I think back to their dorm rooms or something like that, just to avoid having that many people all crammed in one sort of space. Again, you know, it's not perfect, it's not ideal, but there is no way to totally socially isolate on a college campus. I mean, it's just impossible to do. You know, and even the idea of everyone staying 6 feet away, we've all been in a convenience store where people won't stand 6 feet away from you. And again, you imagine that many students that it's going to be a really tricky thing to enforce. You know, they are working issues into the student code of conduct, sort of requirements, so that students can be punished if they break the rules. But again, it's going to be touch and go, not only for the fall semester, but I think probably for the full academic year, unless, you know, magically they come up with a cure for this. or a vaccine, that this is just going to be something that every week, I think we're going to have to be constantly kind of updating and looking at things. And again, if there is, you know, if one or two students come down with it, you know, having to do contact tracing, are you going to have to shut down certain classes, right? If a student in my class comes down with it, you know, for safety reasons, theoretically, we should all socially isolate for 12 to 14 days. If that's the kind of stuff that's going on, again, it's really going to be a lot of chaos. But you know, most faculty, from what I've seen, are really, you know, recognize that the job is to teach students, and that we're going to do it in whatever way we have to. Again, I'm one of the faculty. I'm one of the, about the third who ideally wants to be face to face in some way. That's how I teach. The idea of not being able to be in a classroom is sort of anathema to me. But I also recognize that very quickly I could be sitting behind a Zoom screen for the bulk of my classes. And again, so, you know, faculty in some ways are in essence having to prep two totally different classes, right? It may be the same subject material, but one is required to be online and the other one's, you know, more of a face-to-face.
We've got so much that we could cover here. But I do want to ask you one other quick question, and you hit on it a little bit. Are there any guidelines now at the university that are kind of red lines that say to the school we have to go to online learning for everyone? Now we've got to close the campus back down. I mean, is it five students contacting the disease? Is it 25? Or are there other guidelines that you're looking at?
You know, I've not heard specific numbers, and that doesn't mean that there aren't. I have not heard specific numbers. And again, I think a lot of it is really kind of going to depend on how those numbers are playing out, right? If it's five students who are all in the same classroom, well, you know that you've got a very serious problem then. If it's one student who is in, you know, this set of classes, another student in a different set of classes where we're less concerned about, you know, a huge explosion. But again, you know, I've got a colleague who works in computer science who has been running these sort of data models, right, sort of showing on a college campus, even if it's a de-densified campus, you have one carrier and watching how it can spread. And a lot of that depends, again, on where it is spreading, right? One student, for example, with COVID kind of just walking through the middle of campus is a lot less dangerous than one student with COVID being trapped in a fairly small classroom with seven other people all breathing the same air for an hour and 15 minutes. And so again, in terms of hard lines or hard numbers, I've not heard any yet. Again, I think some of those specifics like that, a lot of it is we're just going to have to wait and see. You know, I mean, the things that universities are preparing right now, at least those that are planning some sort of opening, is how do we actually get this open in the fall? How do we actually do it? What's it going to look like? And so that's right now, I think, the primary thinking of what a lot is going on. And so there's a lot of faculty doing online teaching training or hybrid teaching training and things like that. I think once all of those things sort of figured out, then figuring out, okay, this is the number of cases where we have to shut back down. And again, some of that may come from the state or the state system, that while we may be much more protected out here on the Eastern Shore, or if there are huge spikes at College Park or Baltimore, the system could say, all right, everybody's online. And this is sort of what happened back in the spring.
Adam, let me shift gears a little bit. We have a few minutes left. You have been doing online learning now for a semester. I don't know the exact time period, but two quick questions, if you would. One, what have you learned about online learning during this period that the university has been engaged in this form of instruction? And then second, how are you evaluating the results of this kind of what is really a real experiment in higher education?
It really is. I have to say, for full disclosure, between being department chair and faculty senate president in the spring, I was not teaching any. I had course reductions for that other work. And so I dodged actually being in the classroom or on the virtual classroom in the spring. So I can't speak for me personally, but I can speak for a lot of what I've read and what I've heard from other colleagues that, in the spring, it was a very sudden shift. And so a lot of what I think most faculty, or at least a lot of faculty were doing, was just trying to do the face-to-face teaching they normally do over Zoom. Just try to kind of keep, well, that's what we know. At least at Salisbury University, they're offering training this summer. I just began it the other day. And it really is trying to set up helping faculty understand that students often learn very differently in hybrid or online formats. And that we need to evaluate the courses much more effectively, right? Particularly for fully online classes where students are just kind of left to do it at their own pace. If you're doing a Zoom class, in some ways it is structurally similar to a face-to-face class where, if the class is Monday, Wednesday, 2 to 3:15, well, you got to sit there at your computer from 2 to 3:15 and we all kind of pretend we're in a classroom together. And so in some ways, that is an easier thing to work with than the hybrid of fully online classes, which again, for SU at least, the vast majority of the faculty have never done any of this stuff before the spring. And so
it's a real learning experience, I guess, for everybody, and things will change as you gather information and as the experience broadens and deepens. I did want to ask you about one other policy that is being implemented regarding international students. There are over a million international students in colleges and universities in the U.S., and from my research indicates that they represent about 5.5% of the higher education population, but they also contribute $45 billion to the U.S. economy. And yet now universities and international students are faced with a policy that says if you are not engaged in any in-person instruction, if all of your instruction is online and you're an international student, you will have to leave the country or you will be deported. How is the university, Salisbury, dealing with this issue, or is it not an issue for you?
No, I mean, I think it's an issue for any student that has, or any university that has international students. We may not have as many as, a lot of the bigger schools, but even SU does have a pretty decent sized number of international students. And again, one of the ways that the university has to think about this is in terms of revenue, right? International students tend to pay substantially more than in-state students. It's a pretty big knock financially on universities to not have access to those students. Again, as you mentioned earlier, a number of universities are now getting together to try to sue to stop this policy because it really would have tremendously negative impacts, not only on universities' financial solvency, but on the students themselves. A lot of those students are in STEM disciplines, but there are international students in other disciplines as well. A number of international students come to study English as a second language, teaching English as a second language to then go back to their home country and teach that. And so, there have long been some policies established that international students who are in the United States need to be taking a certain percentage of their courses face-to-face. And there's a certain logic to that I understand that, well, if you're here, we want you to take some classes as opposed to just sitting in a room. This is a very different moment in time where, and some institutions are not having any face-to-face classes. And so to me, in many ways, seems fundamentally wrong to punish those international students for that, right? It's not as if the students themselves said, well, I just want to take a bunch of online classes. And so it will be interesting to see how these lawsuits play out. I mean, they would have to play out very, very quickly. But my guess is in the long run that we will see a pretty steady decline in international students over the next couple of years, that this will have a ripple impact. And unfortunately, I think that this is very much linked to certain anti-immigrant policies that we have seen sort of going on before, that this in some ways was an easy way for the Trump administration to get rid of some international students who are here abroad and not have them come back. That may be a fairly cynical reading of it, but I fear that there is, this is not about education, this policy. This is about something other than that. And universities are rightfully upset and rightfully fighting back against it. So unfortunately, all I can say right now is fingers crossed that the legal appeals do help out and that these students are allowed to take classes.
Are you making any accommodations in-person, one-on-one educational opportunities for those for international students that are threatened?
Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that here. I think one of the other tricky things in terms of understanding the data is knowing how many of these international students are still in fact here, right? That there were a number of them who had gone back home when everybody went online in the spring, thinking that they would come back in the fall. And so there's a number of these international students that are back in their home countries right now. And again, if they are not allowed to take classes online, they will not be allowed to return to the country. If they don't return after a certain amount of time, their visas run out, they have to do the whole process again, pay for all the applications. And so it is, I think some larger schools still have more international students here that are really struggling with it. I don't know the numbers here at Salisbury, unfortunately.
Well, Adam, thank you very much for joining me again this morning on Delmarva Today. You're an incredibly valuable asset for Delmarva Public Radio, and we really appreciate your willingness to give us so much of your time. And I hope you'll agree to come back again in the fall to update us again on how the university is doing in the midst of this pandemic.
Be my pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Here is a brief follow-up to my discussion with Dr. Wood on international students and the policy that they must take some in-person coursework in order to remain in the U.S. A short time following my interview with Professor Wood, the Department of Homeland Security rescinded the directive. The change was in response to the lawsuits filed by Harvard University and MIT discussed by Dr. Wood. So the students, colleges, and universities are safe for the moment. But these are uncertain times. Stay tuned. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.